Thus, the natural or temporal common good of the state will be always aimed at, in the way best calculated to favor the development of true personality in and through the mystical body of Christ. The civil power will then have a pure and higher notion of its proper end, acquired in the full light of Catholic truth, and political action, both in rulers and ruled, will come fully under the influence of supernatural life. Economics is the science which studies primarily the personal relations which constitute the family, the relations of husband and wife, parents and children, masters and servants, and then secondarily, the relations of those persons to external goods, the rights of property, and the use and acquisition of wealth. Etymologically, economy is the government of the home and of the family. Economics studies families in the constituent relations of their members and then in their conditions of existence. Of course, the organization of family life in view of providing its members with sufficient material resources is, though secondary, a very important element in economics. The ancients distinguished two ways of acquiring riches. The first way made of wealth an end in itself, and instead of regarding such an art as an element of civilization, they thought it detestable. They pointed out that this perverted act had its origin in the malice of men who wanted to live not according to virtue, but according to their caprices and in the foolish pursuit of pleasure. They remarked also that this art had given rise to the so-called principle of the fecundity of money and brought about the introduction of stock exchange operations. Needless to say, the fact did not escape their notice that as artificial wealth can increase indefinitely, and the art of acquiring it cannot keep pace with it, the best things in the world had been perverted in order to transform them into instruments of gain. Thus justice was administered, medicine practiced, wars carried on, intelligence and thought concentrated on the acquisition of money, ever more money. Natural wealth is that by which natural wants are supplied, for example, food, drink, clothing, vehicles, dwellings, and such like. Artificial wealth is that which is not a direct help to nature, as, for instance, money. This was invented by the art of man for the convenience of exchange and as a measure of things saleable. The desire for natural riches is not without limit, because nature is satisfied with a certain amount of them. The desire for artificial wealth is, however, unlimited, for it is the servant of disordered concupiscence. This art of making money, which the ancients excluded from political and economic science, is the one which in modern times has been decorated with the title of political economy. There is, however, a second way of seeking to increase artificial riches, namely, when they are sought as a means of procuring what is necessary for life. The rule and measure of such acquisition will be the service of a truly worthy life. Such an art, it is clear, will be closely dependent on genuine economic and political science. Not, of course, that it forms an integral part thereof, but it plays the role of an auxiliary art, for it furnishes to economics and to politics the instrument they need to attain their end. Alas, Aristotle saw that even in his time, many men acted in politics and economics, just like money changers. Political action and legislation, especially in economic matters, must ever seek to strengthen family life, and accordingly must not only not admit divorce, but must always aim at benefiting the citizens through their families as far as possible. It will be difficult at the present epoch, when so many efforts are made to loosen family ties, and when riches are worshipped, to restore to the world economy in its original meaning. Catholics, however, should not forget that when following Popes Leo XIII and Pius XI, they are demanding a family wage or aiming at setting up guilds or corporations as auxiliaries of family life. Their efforts are directed to the task of restoring the family to its true place in the center of the economic order. It is worthy of note that the English poor laws, which began with Protestantism, introduced the separation of husband and wife in the poorhouses established under them. The Catholic organization of the preceding centuries had respected family life. The importance of the family as the nucleus of the state should be remembered in connection with such questions as that of state-provided meals for school children. In a well-known passage of St. Thomas's De Regimine Principum, the angelic doctor sums up the aims of a good ruler of a state as follows, quote, because the happiness and moral rectitude of the present life have as end the happiness of heaven, it belongs to the ruler to procure the common good of the people in such wise as to enable them to obtain celestial happiness. Accordingly, he ought to command what leads therefore and, as far as possible, forbid what is opposed to it. The road that leads to true happiness and the obstacles to be encountered thereon are made known to us by the divine law.